Advertising your business with GCN is simple, effective,
and more affordable than you might think.
Visit advertise.gcnlive.com for more info. Take your business to the next level.
Welcome back to the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio. And now, here's Gene Steinberg.
You were saying there that we need to bring all these strange characters, these curious, wacky characters, to a wider public. And that was one thing, especially in the early days. We had all of these unique characters. And one really good thing Jim Moseley did, he ran a monthly lecture series in New York City in the mid-60s. And the thing about it is he picked guests from all different areas of UFO research. Like we had this 7-foot-tall UFO contactee, Alexander McNeil. I lectured once before his group. We had other people who were very serious about the subject, very scientific. We had Dr. Frank Stranges, another one of those contactees. All of these people, each month you didn't know who'd come on. And that was one thing. Jim tried to stay in contact with all these people, despite the different beliefs, the different factions in the UFO field. I bet if Richard Hall wanted to come on and they didn't hate each other, that he would be allowed to have lectured before Jim Moseley.
Yeah, fascinating. Yep, that's wonderful. Yeah, so I from my standpoint, as I said, there may well be colleagues and people out there who behind my back say something, but I'm not aware of it. And as I said to you, I find student interest in this topic pretty lively. I suppose shouldn't be surprised. I mean, if you look at the history of the UFO phenomenon, I mean, the first sort of surveys that started to be conducted of public opinion about the subject, in which they started to make some effort to break down public opinion into different groups of people and based on their age and education and stuff. That only starts to take place in the mid-60s at the earliest. But from those very earliest surveys right on through the stuff that I've seen, we constantly have seen that the interest in the paranormal in general and interest in UFOs and a belief in the idea that I'm willing to entertain there's something in here that's valuable and important, that tends to have a stronger support, stronger following among younger people under the age, say, of roughly 24, right? And that it's much, much weaker among people over the age of 60. And that's pretty consistent. That's pretty consistent over time.
You know, what's interesting here is that in the old days, you'd think most of the people interested in UFOs were older people.
But those groups, Gene, that you were participating in, I'm guessing most everybody involved was younger?
Well, they were younger at the time.
Yeah, that's
okay. Remember, I was late teens, early 20s when I was doing it. Jim Moseley being, what, another 10, 15 years older than that. So he would be in his 30s. Yeah. And a lot of the people that we knew were then in that age group. Of course, all of us have aged quite a bit since then, more for some than for others. But no, I understand the point of view. Now, before we were going into the navigation of the UFO contact experience, from something where you meet benevolent space brothers to something where the alleged space people are indifferent or even a little bit mean, especially where they're taking painful experiments, taking painful techniques to perform physical experiments on people.
Right. And, you know, again, there too, when you look at the history of that, the history of those kinds of claims, again, it's like almost anything you study in history. I always tell my students, any phenomenon or any social phenomenon you look at, it has no real actual beginning. The beginning is never the beginning. There's all these precursors to a phenomenon. So even though we tend to associate it with the kind of stuff that happens with Bud Hopkins is going to chronicle. There are traces of these kind of more, let's call them more sinister stories, or I think Coral Lorenzen used to call them hostility incidents. And that's actually a good place to begin, because really one of the people, Stringfield was one of the people who was talking about this stuff already at a fairly early phase. But I think Coral Lorenzen in particular was really key in all of this. I credit her with actually a lot. I feel in many ways that Hopkins and Jacobs and maybe even Mack to some extent, maybe they just never read her. But basically they took a lot of what she had already argued already back in the late 50s and early 60s, lock, stock, and barrel, really. And she was already in the APRO Bulletin and in private papers. If you look at her private papers and you read private correspondence, she was talking about this stuff. And it's clear that there is a set of narratives and stories and claims out there that are just not looking like the stuff that everybody else has talked about. It's not the contactees, and it's not the sort of impish little green men. There's a kind of a dark edge to them, and she's trying to piece it all together, she says, in the 50s and 60s. And she ends up, you know, her early books in the mid-early 60s sort of talk about this. But that stuff, you know, finally Flying Saucer Review in the mid-60s starts to take it seriously and talk about it, and then it moves on. And you have some incidents, as you just talked about, Travis Walton, among others, Betty Andreessen in the late 70s. But the thing really explodes in the 80s, and the key there is really going to be the fact that you have these crusaders. You have these high-profile figures, particularly Bud Hopkins, David Jacobs, to a lesser extent in terms of the publicity that he gets, and Whitley Strieber. They, over the course of the 80s, really helped to turn this into a movement, right? It's something that needs to be pushed forward, right? It needs to be something that, that needs to be not just talked about, but the people involved need to be given a voice, and they need to be given a place and a safe place to sort of talk about what they're doing and seek support from one another.
I've kind of stayed away from a lot of the abduction stories and cases. I don't know. It's difficult for me to separate the other things like the sleep paralysis and things like that. You know, there's often there's little evidence, and that kind of reminds me. So the Paracast old motto was separating signal from noise, and there's a lot of noise in the UFO field. I mean, but we have things, and of course, some people say that, you know, that it's all baloney because they're fakes. Well, talk to a owner of an art gallery. They have this huge issue of counterfeits, and, you know, or go to the bank and ask them about counterfeit money. I mean, just because there's some fakery involved in a subject doesn't mean that there's not some core to it. So, but it's very difficult for us to sort that out. So, you know, do you have advice for anyone to how they can find what's genuine in all this?
Yeah, you're quite right. I mean, one of the things I also talk about and argue for is also realizing we have to say that part of the history of UFO sightings and reports and talk about it, but also alien contact claims involves hoaxing and lying and people trying to make a buck, or people just looking for attention, or maybe confused people who are looking for attention. That is a part of that history as well. It clouds the subject. It makes it very difficult to, at times, know who's being sincere, right? Let alone authentic, right? So it's one of the things I feel like, on one hand, methodologically, you've always got to have that in mind. But I think what you do is you incorporate that into again, this, what I'd said before, is the messiness of human history.
Before we get too messy, we have these messy announcements.
Right.
To be redundant about messiness. Greg, Gene, and Kurt, you're in
the Paracast.
Do you need a website? Well, you can get a great deal on hosting services with Namecheap's legendary coupon code. They're offering substantial hosting discounts on shared hosting, business hosting, VPS hosting, reseller hosting, and even dedicated servers. Namecheap is preferred by millions. It's backed by a money-back guarantee. Use the coupon code LEGENDARY to cash in on this special deal at Namecheap.com, Namecheap.com.
First came Attack of the Rockoids, and it was a critically acclaimed success. And now there's The Coming of the Protectors. A former military intelligence man is contacted by a space woman in a dream. A dream that turns out to be a nightmare, because evil forces on her distant planet are planning to conquer the Earth. This is gripping science fiction of the classic kind. Attack of the Rockoids and The Coming of the Protectors. Find out more at Rockoids.com. That's Rockoids, Rockoids.com.
No matter if supply lines are down, product deliveries are slow, and that most everything costs more these days, you still have neck and shoulder pain, right? Good news. Sunny Bay has new products that target neck and shoulder pain. Products that are in stock now, ready to ship anywhere now. Like our extra long neck heating pads. They provide soothing relief to painful sore necks and backs. You can heat them in a microwave oven, and they come in a variety of colors and patterns. And for stress relief, get our lavender scent hands-free neck wraps. Or maybe you need one of our smaller lower back wraps. Great for seniors. Again, there's no shipping delays from Sunny Bay. Find our new products on Amazon, Walmart, Etsy, and sunny-bay.com. Just search for Sunny Bay Neck Wraps. All our products are great for men or women, are reusable, and easy to clean. Remember, just search for Sunny Bay Neck Wraps. Order now because stock is high and shipping is fast. From Sunny Bay.
Anytime, any place, anywhere. Radio remains the most intimate of all forms of media. At home, at work, in the car, on smartphones. Over 90% of consumers still listen to radio every week. That makes choosing radio as a place to advertise your business one of the best decisions you can make. Email advertise@gcnlive.com and partner up with an experienced GCN representative. Advertise@gcnlive.com. Easy, affordable, effective.
I am a non-attorney spokesperson representing a team of lawyers who've helped people that have been injured or wronged. Have you been diagnosed with cancer? Are you one of the millions who have taken Zantac or other generic versions of this popular drug to help treat stomach issues? Then pay close attention to this message. The FDA said it detected low levels of a probable cancer-causing chemical known as NDMA in Zantac and other generic forms of this popular drug. They've banned sales and even removed it from the market. If you've been diagnosed with cancer and you've taken Zantac or a generic equivalent, call the legal helpline now. You could receive a free cash award and have your medical expenses covered. And there's no upfront cost to you. They only get paid if you win. So please call now. 800-998-7173. 800-998-7173. 800-998-7173. That's 800-998-7173.
Frustrated trying to get business capital? Want to take the slow process and rejection out of the equation? GCNLoans.com removes the slow, irritating approval process. Instead, get quick, simple funding. Powered by David Allen Capital, 80% of our pre-qualified clients are approved in days. Pre-qualify at GCNLoans.com and get your money this week. It's that easy. GCNLoans.com. That's GCNLoans.com.
We'd like to hear from you. If you have a comment or question about the Paracast, send it to news@theparacast.com. That's news@theparacast.com. And don't forget to visit our famous Paracast community forums at forum.theparacast.com.
So, of course, we have supposedly real claims or reports in UFOs. We have the fakery. Did you encounter much evidence of fakery in doing your history and this research into the field?
I don't think that fakery has played a particularly significant role. I don't believe that hoaxing and fakery has, you know, sort of corrupted, you know, that all of the sightings and claims that are made, or that it somehow operates at a sort of almost pandemic level. No, I don't think it's that wide, has historically been that widespread. I think it's fair to say that by and large, most of the people who come forward historically, who you read, most of them seem to be operating sincerely. That sincerity, now, to be fair, may mean that some people may be sincere, but they may not be entirely correct in what they're talking about. You know, and there's no question there are people where you have to maybe ask some more serious questions, right? I mean, again, we talked about George Adamski before. I think quite a number of people, including Jim Moseley, fairly raised a lot of questions about the extent to which some things are just plain old made up, that there wasn't even a sincerity there. Though then you get contactees like Orfeo Angelucci, who I know a lot of people say he seems to have been one of the most sincere of the contactees. But I would say, by and large, when you just talk about your average UFO witness, I think there's a great deal of sincerity on most people's parts. So I don't see that playing that critical a role in all this.
Well, I can tell you, of course, that Jim Moseley and Gray Barker were not above perpetrating hoaxes.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, I know. Like the Lost Creek Flying Saucer photo, which was kind of really badly done, mm-hmm. but some people believed it.
Yeah. Yeah. They were famous, I guess, in some circles, infamous for this, right? But they were puckish, right? That was part of what's kind of alluring about the both of them, if you like that kind of stuff. I'm guessing when they did things like that, they must have gotten more than a few people peeved at them.
Well, we go back to the Straith letter, where a friend of Gray Barker's apparently had a relative who worked for the government, so they got official government stationery. Mm-hmm. And one night during one of their drunken meetings, Barker and Moseley wrote these letters signed by R.E. Straith of the Cultural mm-hmm. Exchange Committee. They wrote one of them to George Adamski. Now, anyone mm-hmm. who knew Barker knew he had a distinctive writing style. Mm-hmm. And you know immediately if you're going to look for a possible culprit, that's Barker. Barker did it. Mm-hmm. So Adamski responds, well, this guy, of course, is on the level here. He's recognizing that the government accepts my claims. Obviously, Adamski made himself look like an idiot because of the mm-hmm. fact that the letter was fake. Everyone knew it was Barker at the time. Those who were in the field deeply, those who were seriously involved, like Richard Hall, for example. And certainly I knew about it because Jim told me. But some people, or a lot of people, were taken in by all this and mm-hmm. kind of wondered what this was all about. Maybe there was secret government interest, and that's part of it. So that is part of what these guys did. Mostly it was under the influence of certain substances where they lost their inhibitions.
Another part of it is you have these organizations and they have monthly magazines, you know, at the time, and there was competition between them. There was a constant demand for new material. And, you know, I know some of the shenanigans, like the feuds, were just to keep things interesting. And some of the hoaxes, I think, played into that also. But, you know, newspapers were not that much better, because there would be something like kids playing with a flashlight on mm-hmm. the hill, and they would say it was a mysterious light. They put the flying saucer headline on just anything that was in the air. I mean, it just, because there was a huge public interest in it, you know, for a while. You know, we got, I don't know if it was in the 90s when the media was less likely to make UFO news stories, report on them. But, you know, and that's come back around to some extent now. But if you look in the 50s and 60s and in that era, I mean, it was daily news.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, Kurt, what I would say, the way I would put it is this. And there's no question. Yeah, I mean, there were kids playing pranks and you know, all sorts of things going on. What I would say is what could be said for a good deal of the coverage of UFO reports historically, certainly well into the 70s, probably even into the 80s. And this is true with both local newspapers and also within UFO groups that are covering stuff, is a tendency towards a lack of discrimination. And by discrimination, I mean the idea of trying to evaluate and assess a source of information or the sources of information, and to do your due diligence into asking and digging a little deeper than just a sort of superficial reference to a newspaper article or superficial like phone call. That we know that local newspapers, and studies have shown this, that local newspapers covering this stuff oftentimes didn't do much more than just a quick phone call, if that. And we know that if you just look at some of the ways in which a lot of articles in UFO periodicals were, there was no differentiation between something that had been a kind of throwaway in the back of some newspaper somewhere and then a full-length article somewhere or a deep investigation. They both sort of carried oftentimes equal weight in terms of how an article would operate, including when you looked at people like even Jacques Vallée, who would do his statistical analyses. That, I think, to me, is more endemic. And that's where the hoaxing gets folded into that. So it was kind of, for me, from a distance, from a critical standpoint, I think you can say that lack of differentiation and discrimination of sources, that has historically been fairly endemic. You still see it on the internet, I think, quite a bit, even today. That, to me, is a kind of a chronic problem and a chronic challenge for a lot of ufology.
You know, it's probably worse today, I think, because today anyone can be a publisher.
Mm-hmm.
You know, before, when you wanted to be a publisher in the 60s, it took a little bit of effort and often a little bit of money. But nowadays, you just get online and you say something. You want to produce a newsletter? You could do it on a Macintosh, Apple Macintosh computer, with free software called Pages. You can create ebooks, you can create magazines, free. Upload it to your site, put it in PDF format, people can download it. You have a publication. You are now a publisher with no investment.
Mm-hmm.
So I think in that sense it's worse. Greg Adikian joins us. He's a professor of history at Penn State University. And amongst the things he teaches, the world of the paranormal in terms of history, which we're exploring, and there's a thousand more things we can talk about. And though we're going to keep him around for after the Paracast, part of Paracast Plus 2. With Gene and Greg and Kurt, you're in
the Paracast.
Listening to GCN. Be sure to visit GCNlive.com today.
What if you could cut your heating bills this winter with your existing wood-burning fireplace and not spend thousands doing it? You can with Great Wall of Fire Fireplace Grates. Our U.S.-patented, made-in-America Wall of Fire Grates increase fireplace efficiency, eliminate fireplace smoke problems, and come with a 30-day money-back guarantee. See our grates in action and get free shipping from walloffire.com or call 800-274-7364. Fireplace heat without fireplace smoke. Walloffire.com.
Hi, this is Dr. Joel Wallach, the Mineral Doctor. You've heard me talk about 90 for Life for years. 60 minerals, 16 vitamins, 12 amino acids, 2 fatty acids. You may not know this, that I've actually designed Arthrodex for animals. That's right. Your pets need 90 for Life, too. Get this essential pet product by calling 877-279-9422. That's 877-279-9422. Again, 877-279-9422.
USA Radio News with Chris Barnes.
A first wave of new U.S. troops deployed to Eastern Europe now setting up in Poland and in Germany. President Biden ordered the move in response to the continued threat of a Russian incursion into Ukraine. The troops' arrival coming amid reports Russia now has enough troops, tanks, and other military hardware poised along the Ukraine border to launch a full-scale invasion. Moscow has repeatedly said it has no such plans, blaming the West for stoking international tensions. However, Moscow has made it clear it's looking to prevent Ukraine from being able to join NATO. Hundreds of protesters in the streets of Minneapolis in response to the killing of a 22-year-old man. They were demanding justice for Amir Locke, fatally shot while apparently asleep and holding a firearm during a police raid a few days ago. This is USA Radio News. Two people fatally shot at an apartment complex in a suburb of Milwaukee yesterday. The man responsible later died of an apparent self-inflicted gunshot wound, but not before taking aim at police who responded to the scene, as we hear from the Brown Deer, Wisconsin Police Chief Peter Nimmer.
Our officers were dispatched for a shots fired call. Upon our arrival to the scene, our officers were fired upon from the second floor balcony.
No officers were wounded, but one other person, a civilian bystander, was injured, but not seriously. Snowboarder Julia Marino, bringing home the United States' first medal of the 2022 Winter Olympics in Beijing, winning the silver medal in women's slope-style snowboarding. The FAA says there was a big increase in the number of dangerous laser strikes on aircraft last year. The report saying over 9,700 such incidents, a 41% increase over the previous year, were reported. This is USA Radio News.
Stop aging now. Restore those joints. Boost your strength. Because it's official. NutriMedical has released the most exciting, powerful anti-aging supplement on the market. Dr. Bill Deagle's Red Deer Velvet DR has been approved by the U.S. Patent Office. Imagine stem cell rejuvenation all in one capsule without huge expense. Dr. Bill MD discovered that as an unborn baby grows in the mother's womb, he or she does not deteriorate or physically age. Red Deer Velvet DR, like the uterus, provides 300 biomolecules and 6 hormones protected in one special DR capsule that delivers lipid packages directly into your circulation. This patented technology bypasses the stomach and is released into the small bowel unaltered by digestive enzymes and stomach acid. Remember, Red Deer Velvet DR. Improve endurance, stimulate your immune system, increase learning ability, and even improve sexual libido with Red Deer Velvet DR. Click NutriMedical.com. That's NutriMedical.com. Or call toll-free 888-212-8871 and get on the road to a newer, rejuvenated, happier you.
Hello, this is John Burroughs, one of the witnesses to the Rendlesham UFO incident. You're listening to the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio.
Now, I understand here about discrimination and or lack of discrimination in the coverage of sightings. Like a place like MUFON will publish a sighting and you wonder if they investigated it. And I can understand anyone involved in a small group who might do it. Certainly we did. In the early days, we didn't have the resources to investigate anything. So we figured if it appeared in the newspaper, there had been some degree of vetting. And that wasn't always true. On the other hand, forgetting the phenomena of the 1890s and the 19th century where newspaper publishers would just make stuff up. Do we see that nowadays at all?
Oh, there's no question that there's stuff made up on the internet, as we've just been talking about. Now, in terms of the newspapers and news coverage, the thing is that one of the things that hasn't changed, you know, is that basically, you know, all forms of media or most all forms of media are monetized or want to be monetized. And so they're going to chase the money. And, you know, you can wag your finger at it. On one hand, to be fair to it, you say, well, that's how you stay alive. You know, it's pretty hard to do this stuff for free. But it does create that dynamic that Kurt was talking about before, and that is the permanent search for sensationalism, for the sensational. And the dynamic that historically has created, right, is therefore always keeping the story alive. And that you both have been talking about how, again, this sort of maybe competitive quality within the UFO community did the same kind of thing. And newspapers and magazines have operated in the same way. And it hasn't changed, right, when it goes to kind of the personalities and the groups that go around today on the internet. So it seems to me that, you know, in a sense, it's inescapable that this would be part of it. Of course, the problem with that, besides making it even more difficult to sort of, you know, cut through this stuff to find out where's the authenticity, is that this is one of the chief reasons why you see academics, particularly scientists, want to steer clear of this stuff. So when I talk to my colleagues who work in astronomy, for instance, they always talk about the fact that even if they have some interest in the topic or see some value in discussing this issue, that they feel like if they don't want to get too close because it's corrupted, or I don't know if they use that term, but I'll use it. It's been corrupted by these cultural dynamics, by the sensationalism. And they seek a kind of, my other term, not theirs, boring sobriety. That's what they want. And so they find this other stuff to be, go back to the signal noise, too much noise, too much cultural noise that is interfering with the ability to say, do this in any kind of serious fashion, which is why they feel in the end, many of them do, I just want to keep this stuff at a distance.
Well, speaking of astronomers, so we got this Harvard project, and we've talked about it a few times on the show, the Project Galileo, or Galileo Project, I forget which it is, and Avi Loeb is he's interested in extraterrestrial bodies moving through our solar system, and that's great, but he's kind of connected it with the UFO world now. However, he's not interested in the stuff we've been talking about, historical cases. So he's partnered with a few people, including Jacques Vallée, and has several other UFO people as associates. But without... Well, I'll say our point of view, and then you can tell us what you think. But we feel that by ignoring the past, you know, I understand there's a lot of noise in there, but there's some very solid cases that can, and some research methods that should be useful going forward. So we think that's unfair to just sort of just pack that away and look only at what you can detect with the radar or a telescope. So what's your take on this?
Yeah, wow. It's again fascinating, and I'll talk about it as by and large as a you know a new social development. So I've noted that too. As you might imagine, I noted it when he made it very clear. Yeah, we're not going to talk about historical and past events. Part of me views that as a response to just what I was talking about. On one hand, he's a smart fellow. He knows that even though he's been willing to put himself out there and say, I'm willing to use the words and walk the walk and get engaged in this topic, he also recognizes that it's going to be fraught with all sorts of challenges, and from colleagues and people who sit there and say, you know, this stuff is so contaminated with so many cultural artifacts and assumptions, it'll be impossible to navigate this and to do this in a scientifically rigorous way. I viewed his sort of renunciation of past cases to be an expression of that, of a way to sort of avoid that. I kind of agree with you and you guys that I don't think that logically makes sense to me, because the value, the reason why you even begin to think these things are extraterrestrial is because of the historical debates and arguments that have been going on, in part. The other part of it is you still have to ask yourself a historical question, right? You still have to ask yourself the question is, let's say the Galileo Project finds something and says, boy, this looks promising. I mean, you still got to ask yourself the question. So the extraterrestrials just sort of popped up yesterday. Have they been here before? How long ago was it? It does seem to me you still end up having to kind of excavate the past and past incidents in order to have that conversation. So I don't think you quite skirt this historical question in all of this. So I kind of agree with you on that front.
Well, the other question, of course, is if we don't investigate the previous cases, a lot of compelling evidence, important evidence, is being ignored.
Mm-hmm.
The UFO field didn't start in 2004.
Right.
And exactly. We understand calling them UAP instead of UFO because of the stench of the acronym UFO, just like when UFO was created, flying saucers was overwrought. So we had to call them UFOs. And now after all these years, we'll call them UAP. Okay, musical names, no big deal. And if UAP doesn't do it, they'll invent something else. Maybe they'll use UAO, which is what Afro called them. Unidentified aerial objects that never took off.
Yeah. No, right. I mean, I agree with you. You can't neglect this other material. It is fraught. And the other point is that it is something that, you know, as you well know, veteran ufologists have been noting about a lot of the people who are now sort of the most prominent figures out there who are kind of crusading for the recognition of UAP or UFOs these days, is that most all of them are people who don't have much of a historical background about this stuff, don't seem to be much aware or interested in that historical background. And I know from talking with, you know, veterans in ufological research that that's a sore point with them, and they feel it's a shortcoming in all of this stuff, right?
Well, you know, Lou Elizondo would be one of those. He claims that when he was studying this phenomena for the government, that he willfully ignored history because he didn't want it to contaminate his point of view. And it seems odd that he was chosen for that program. And since he has eventually picked up some things, but he doesn't have a really good grasp on it.
More to come with Kurt Collins, Greg Adigian, and Gene Steinberg. You're in
the Paracast.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Visit GCNlive.com today.
Hey, listeners. I want you to have the entire Paracast experience. So I'd like to tell you about After the Paracast. After the Paracast is an exclusive feature for subscribers to the Paracast Plus. With After the Paracast, you never know what's going to happen next. After the Paracast features color commentary, special interviews, and further conversations with Paracast guests. With Paracast Plus, you can download a very special enhanced version of the Paracast also. We do offer exclusive music, videos, and more features are coming. To get more info about subscribing, please visit theparacast.plus. Once again, theparacast.plus. Prices are just $1.50 a week, less than a cup of coffee at your local convenience store. Check out theparacast.plus to learn more about Paracast Plus.
If you're concerned about the power grid and want to generate your own supply of off-grid electricity, this will be the most important message you'll hear this year. Here's why. We now have a small number of solar generators back in stock. These emergency backup systems provide life-saving backup power when you need it most. And unlike gas generators, solar generators run quietly, emit no dangerous fumes, and produce an endless supply of free electricity from the sun. Whether it's wildfires, dangerous weather, power grid issues, or just getting off the grid, you'll never have to suffer through painful power outages again. Even better, all this week, radio listeners get over $700 in free off-the-grid bonuses, too. Go to MySolarBackup.com to learn more and check availability. That's MySolarBackup.com. Look for the free report, Crisis Cooling, how to make absolutely sure your meat, milk, and medicines stay safe and cool in any power outage. Yours free at MySolarBackup.com.
You don't sit behind a desk every day to earn a living. You're out and about making it happen. And sometimes you get a little bit behind on your paperwork, you know, like bookkeeping and paying your taxes. It's easy to get behind on paying your taxes. It happens to the best of us. And you know what happens next. The big bad IRS comes knocking on your door. And when that happens, you need to call the good old boys at the Tax Doctor. Let them do what they do best. Deal and negotiate with the IRS so you pay the lowest you can in back taxes that the law allows. We are a 100% U.S.-based company, and we've saved our clients millions over the years in back taxes. If you owe $10,000 or more in back taxes, call my friends right now at the Tax Doctor and learn more.
800-507-3137. 800-507-3137. 800-507-3137. That's 800-507-3137.
Get healthy, not high, with 100% pure CBD powerful natural pain relief from Veterans Vitality. GCN listeners, have you ever thought about how CBD may help you? I'm sure you have heard about the many benefits of CBD. Well, here's your opportunity to try before you buy. Created by veterans and for everyone who deserves better choices, our CBD is derived from organic hemp, grown in the USA, and third-party tested. Veterans Vitality CBD saves you as much as 25 to 50% over our competition, and a portion of all sales is contributed to veteran nonprofits and events. Many of our customers have experienced improved quality of life, help with anxiety, PTSD, and overall well-being. Our products do not contain THC. They are safe, non-addictive, effective, and 100% legal. GCN listeners, get your free trial bottle of premium CBD by simply paying shipping and handling at GCNFreeCBD.com. That's GCNFreeCBD.com. Again, GCNFreeCBD.com. Offered by Veterans Vitality Premium CBD.
Hi, this is Bryce Abel. I'm the producer of Dark Skies, the co-author of AD After Disclosure, and you are listening to the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio.
So Kurt Collins had started with an explanation here that I want him to continue. Kurt?
Well, Greg was mentioning about some of the people involved in the field now not being aware of the past, and he was a gentleman and didn't name names, and I jumped out with the name Lou Elizondo as an example of that. He has cited some historical cases recently, but only those that he thought kind of connected to, you know, with something with a lozenge shape or, you know, something that would support there being tic-tacs throughout history. And otherwise, he's pretty much to ignore the topic. That was my little jab I wanted to get in. So now, Greg, where do you want to take it?
I guess the one thing I'm curious to go back to the Galileo project, right, because Elizondo is one of the people now who's in part consulting, right, with that project. Is that right now the idea is that Loeb has said, we welcome the input of people from outside academia. We want to collaborate across, you know, all sorts of boundaries here. It's a big tent. I think that's actually in many ways quite a positive and quite, at least to my mind, it's way better than an antagonistic approach to things. It's somewhat reminiscent of, from in my mind, to go to think historically of the way the Condon Committee in the 60s started, at least, right? It talked about doing things that way. And of course, those of us who know the history knows that that unraveled, and it unraveled pretty fast and really descended into a lot of acrimony. The question remains open. Can these disparate groups and parties involved in the Galileo Project get along? I think they're going to find that people are going to have different agendas, different approaches. Ultimately, it's very, very clear that this is Avi Loeb's project and he's going to be in charge. So we'll see. But the jury is still out, again, about how well everybody's going to be able to sort of work this out as a collaborative venture.
Let me throw something at you here in this final segment of our main show, and that is one thing we have not mentioned. We've talked about contactees, UFO flaps, the various people. The R word, Roswell.
Mm-hmm.
Have you spent much time looking into that?
Okay, I'm going to say something that's going to really make some people angry, I suppose, is that I haven't. I know of it. I know about a lot of the stuff surrounding it. And I think the primary reason why I haven't delved into it a lot, and I probably will not necessarily donate a good deal of my book to it, is because, again, in terms of the way in which the history of interest in UFOs played out, it wasn't a very large event until Stanton Friedman and et al. Got involved in it and sort of got it going. And then, of course, it became a major event. But by and large, I haven't sort of centered on it. Again, I'm familiar with the initial stories and some of the contradictions and then some of the ways in which then the story was rediscovered again and how it became a part of UFO lore by the 1980s. But to me, it still seems to be, if you look at the history, it didn't occupy a very prominent place in a lot of the major discussions that were going on.
I kind of agree with you because I didn't think much about Roswell until the book came out with Stan Friedman, who didn't even get a byline. He was credited. William Moore, of course, probably was partly responsible for perpetrating the MJ-12 document hoax. Mm-hmm. And Charles Berlitz, best known as the grandson of the founder of the Berlitz Language Schools. So he was a spoiled rich kid who in his 60s became famous for writing the Bermuda Triangle,
the
Philadelphia Experiment. These books, by the way, his later books name me as a source, but we won't get into that. I just got free lunches. I didn't get any money for it. I got free lunches from Charles. He was a character himself. You can do a whole book on Charles Berlitz. He was a fascinating character with a twinkle in his eye. And he'd say so often, "I'm honest as the day is long." And I always felt he was saying that in the winter when the days were shorter.
So if Roswell doesn't do it for you, let's give you a semi-hypothetical situation. Another professor comes up, doesn't have an interest in UFOs, and he's going to give you a chance. And he says, what's a case that I can dig into from a historical point of view? So what's one or two that you're going to tell him to look at?
To look at what would interest most of my colleagues. I will tell you right away, I think, and I actually talked about this with colleagues at a workshop last fall, a bunch of historians, and they were fascinated, never had heard about it, and that is the Hill case, Betty and Barney Hill case. Historians find that very, very fascinating. In part, it has a lot to do with the fact that they're a biracial couple in the 1960s, and the fact that, of course, they both come from these very committed, religiously devout, and progressively engaged, right, political individuals. That one really gets people's attention, and they find that quite fascinating. I think the other one is probably Whitley Strieber, because not just because of his fame, but the story and how he frames the story and how complicated it is by all these questions about, is this a positive experience? Is this a religious experience? Is this something damaging to me? I think historians would actually find that, and particularly the moment that that story emerges, I think they'd find that enormously engaging.
I have a quick question about it here. In terms of the Hills live near a military base. They, of course, had suffered because of the early 60s some effects of being a biracial couple. Could they have been the victim of some kind of government experiment?
Yeah, I don't know that I see that. The thing that I keep coming back to is how important and pivotally important Betty's dreams were to her, and how the entire line of what it was that they both were experiencing or both remember experiencing gets tied into those dreams and her write-up of her dreams and the way she sort of assembled them and put them all together in a cohesive narrative. I keep coming back to the fact that so much seems based on her dreams and nightmares. That strikes me as compelling.
Certainly looking at the reality of that. I met her once, and this is in the 70s, where she was a woman, and I guess in her 60s or something like that. And she seemed very nice, very pleasant. And who could say what happened to them? Obviously, Barney Hill had been long dead, I think, from brain cancer or a brain tumor, if I recall. Was I correct, Kurt?
You know, I'm not sure, but yeah, it's sad that we lost him so early, and I think we needed to hear his point of view a little more.
We're going to have more of Greg Agigian's point of view on After the Paracast. Meantime, for listeners to the regular show, where do we find more information about you? Do you have a website or something?
I have a Twitter account, and I tweet somewhat regularly at hashtag Gigian. And otherwise, you can always look me up on the department website and see what I'm up to and what I'm publishing. And I publish some articles every now and again. So just Google me and you'll find a number of different articles I've written on the whole history of UFOs.
You can find us on Twitter if you look for the Paracast on Twitter. We're also the Paracast on Facebook, where for some reason they won't let us put in the URL for our site on Facebook because they're crazy. Maybe that's why they didn't take in as much money and memberships have stalled. We did it. You can also get branded merchandise for the Paracast at theparacast.shop, theparacast.shop, where we give you four different logos to choose from, and you pick the shirt and the size and all that other good stuff. And we also have the Paracast Plus, a special subscription service. We feature this show with higher quality audio, better bit rate, free of the network ads. How about that? It's like paying a higher figure for Paramount Plus, and you get the shows without the commercials. No commercials. And we also offer the After the Paracast podcast, where Greg will be back with some further discussion, a lot of fascinating, unfiltered discussion. That's After the Paracast. To learn more, go check out the Paracast.plus, the Paracast.plus. Get this. If you use the coupon code UFO20, UFO20, we will give you a 20% discount on 5-year and lifetime subscriptions, the Paracast.plus. Greg Agigian, glad to meet you. Thank you for joining us on the Paracast.
Thanks.
The Paracast, featuring Gene Steinberg, is a copyrighted presentation of Making the Impossible, Incorporated. Tune in next week for a new adventure in The Paracast.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Visit GCNlive.com today.
Attack of the Rockoids has been well received by critics and readers alike. It's a thrill-a-minute story you'll never forget. A former U.S. military intelligence officer is haunted by intense dreams about a beautiful woman pleading for his help after a terrible battle in outer space. But the dreams turn out to be true and thrust him into a telepathic love affair with a woman whose faraway planet is intent on destroying the Earth. And now the gripping tale continues in The Coming of the Protectors. It's the second book of the Rockoids trilogy, a galaxy-spanning adventure that pits our hapless heroes against powerful, fanatical enemies that threaten the lives of freedom-loving beings everywhere. Attack of the Rockoids and The Coming of the Protectors, classic science fiction at its best, available now. For more details, visit Rockoids.com. That's Rockoids.com.
Tahibo Tea Club's original Pure Pouty Arco Super Tea comes from the only tree in the world that fungus does not grow on. As a result, it naturally has antifungal, anti-infection, antiviral, antibacterial, anti-inflammation, and anti-parasite properties. So the tea is great for healthy people because it helps build the immune system, and it can truly be miraculous for someone fighting a potentially life-threatening disease due to an infection, diabetes, or cancer. The tea is also organic and naturally caffeine-free. A one-pound package of tea is $49.95, which includes shipping. To order, please visit shopsupertea.com. The first word is shop, spelled S-H-O-P, then the word super, and then the word tea. The complete website is shopsupertea.com or call us at 818-984-6100 Monday through Saturday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. California time. That's 818-984-6100. Shopsupertea.com.